This is KCSB 91.9 in Santa Barbara, and this is the official radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent, Poodle Radio. Set to play at Campbell Hall on Sunday, April 18th, here's Baba Mal and Television. This is Poodle Radio, the official radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent. I am, as usual, Colin Marshall, and today I'm joined in the studio by Roman Baratiak, the Associate Director of UCSB Arts and Lectures. Roman, welcome to the studio.
Thank you, Colin. Pleasure to be here.
I was looking over the schedule you're holding in your hands right now, the spring schedule for Arts and Lectures, and I was thinking to myself, it seems like not a lot of time, first of all, that it's only the months of, essentially, April and May, and that's about it, right?
Correct.
And it seems to be more stuff than I usually see packed into this time frame. Is this just an illusion, or is this actually a more packed sort of schedule than we've usually been seeing?
No, it's an illusion.
It's an illusion, really? Wow.
Yeah. No, every quarter, because we work on the academic quarter system, we're presenting probably close to 25, 30 events. So actually, our fall quarter was extremely busy with performing arts because it was the kickoff of our 50th anniversary. So we really loaded that quarter with a lot of major events. Yo-Yo Ma was in that quarter. But, you know, we're constricted by the academic quarters into really an 8-week time period.
And what does the shape of this quarter look like? You mentioned the character of the previous ones. What can you say much about what this, what the tone of this quarter is versus the previous ones in Arts and Lectures?
Yeah, it's again our typical sort of eclectic mix of public lectures, our cinema series, as well as performing arts. We've got a lot of great performing arts events in April. We tend to slow down a bit in May. But April is also taken with the fifth annual Santa Barbara Human Rights Film Festival.
Right. And now you have worked historically pretty closely with specifically films and arts and lectures, right?
Films and the public lectures program. Those are both in my basket.
Indeed. So you can tell us exactly how the Human Rights Film Festival has evolved.
Yeah, that's an interesting question because we're still trying to get the formula right. So this year we're doing something that we haven't done in the past, which is that we spread the films over 4 nights during the month of April, so one night a week. In the past, we've actually tried 3 nights in a row, which is what we did last year. That seemed to be a bit tough for people because the films are not necessarily easygoing. And to commit to 3 evenings was a challenge. The first year did an opening night on a Friday at the Libero Theater and then all day at Victoria Hall on a Saturday. That was a challenge because you had to commit to an all day on Saturday. So we're trying something different. We'll see how it goes.
And this is spread out then from the 8th of April until the 26th, if I have that correct. And
that's right.
What is the origin of the Human Rights Film Festival? How did this get started in the first place?
Right. This was a conversation that I had with Human Rights Watch, which is an international organization, but has local chapters, committees. There's one in Santa Barbara, as well as one in Los Angeles. And they have a touring program called the Human Rights Watch Film Festival. And so that was what we did the first year, was basically work with them and take films off of their list. After the first year, we decided we still wanted to work with Human Rights Watch, but didn't want to be restricted by only the films that were available in their particular package. So we now, look to a much broader menu that we can select from other distributors.
And how is the selection of films that the Human Rights Film Festival offers, how has that evolved specifically? Because the first thing anybody notices is a surprising internationalism to the offerings. There's each individual film seems to represent a couple of different world perspectives that somebody in Santa Barbara might not necessarily be seeing in movies a lot. But what else ties them together? What has come to tie them together? Obviously, there's themes of human rights, but that's so broad. What can you say about that?
Well, that's an interesting question. Much of it depends on which area is topical right now. So there's been so much focus on the Middle East that you'll see four films from dealing with the situation in that area. So we have a film dealing with Afghanistan, one about Turkey. There's a Israeli-Palestinian documentary, as well as an interesting documentary dealing with the situation in Egypt. Burma's recently been in the news, so we have a documentary called Burma Vijay, an interesting film which was nominated for an Academy Award as a feature documentary. So that's part of it. But one of the things that moving out of the sort of Human Rights Watch menu allowed us to do was to try to do some feature films. We don't do too many, but the film Bliss, for example, is not a documentary. It's really a feature film dealing with an actual situation. Early on, I would say most of the films were documentaries. They still are, but we try to mix in the occasional feature film if we can. Last year, we had Marjan Zatrapi's film called Persepolis.
Oh, yes, I was there for that, certainly.
Yeah. So that's pretty much the change.
With something like the Human Rights Film Festival, just promotionally speaking, how easy or hard is it to convey a message about it to, a potential audience? Because, again, it can be so broad, conceived of one way, that how do you... How do you go about informing people of what this is?
Yeah, it's a challenge. There's a challenge on many levels. So the beginning challenge is, which films are you going to show? Because there are so many films to select from. So kind of whittling down that list to something that's going to engage a variety of different audiences is important. At the same time, you need a core group of people that comes each night. So you have to make it interesting enough that they're going to commit to, say, a festival pass. There's just a lot of challenges with it. You also need to maintain the momentum now over four nights, which we'll see how that goes. One of the things that we've tried to do is to keep the prices really, really low. So, for example, a general public person coming to the full festival can come for $20 for four nights. So it's basically 10 films for $20. And for students, it's even less. It's $16. So we tried not the point isn't to make money on this series. The point is to try to get people to see the films.
Now, also cinematically speaking, you recently announced before these hit the streets, these guides, these schedules, that there is another event that appears to be opening the spring arts and lectures season, which one of my personal favorite filmmakers, Werner Herzog, is going to be here, and his film, yeah, Bad Lieutenant, his new one. I feel like that's something that, was that a sudden development that he was able to come here? Because I'm such a crazed Werner Herzog fan, and it kills me that I'm going to be out of town for this. But was this a sudden thing that it came together? He was going to be talking with Pico Iyer and the stars aligned, or was this a long planned?
No, it came together probably 24 hours prior to the calendar going off to the printer.
So, oh, wow.
It all came together very last minute. I was actually shocked at how quickly Mr. Herzog responded to the invitation. He should have got the invitation from me personally ages ago, but it just didn't happen because we've been swamped. So when he agreed to come on on April 7th, and he's actually fitting it in to a very, very tight schedule because he's flying in from Boulder that day, and there's no way we're going to say no. I mean, Werner Herzog is, you know, he's amazing. It's
yes,
going to be
indeed.
A great, great evening.
Is this the first time he's been to Arts and Lectures?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. Although we've shown over our historical time period many, many of his films.
And this is something I want to talk about because you have a long history with Arts and Lectures. I imagine you started what year? This is your 30th year?
Well, I started full-time in 1980, correct.
1980, so there have been some serious Herzog movies that have passed through the realm of cinema since you began
working
at Arts and
Lectures.
Oh, yeah,
and even prior to that, I was house manager, so there were a lot of films that were coming out in the 70s when I was still a house manager at Campbell Hall. So, you know, of the films just off the top of my head of his that we've shown, we've presented Stroitzek. He did a film, I believe it was called Heart of Glass, interesting film.
Two of my favorites you mentioned right there.
Yeah, where I think the actors were hypnotized in that film. And so we showed that one. We've shown Wojciech, which he did a really interesting film. He did a version of Nosferatu based on the Murnau film. Then, of course, Grizzly Man, Encounters at the End of the World, and Fitzcarraldo, and Aguirre, Wrath of God. But, you know, his film output is incredible. I mean, he's turned out something like 60 films, including really, really interesting documentaries. I don't know, Colin, if you've seen a film called Little Dieter Needs to Fly.
Oh, yes, I've got that one at home.
Yeah, that's a great, great film. So I'm super excited. I mean, he is, he's really one of the stars of the new German cinema movement, along with Fassbinder and Schlondorf and von Trotta and others. And, I mean, he was in the heyday of Truffaut and other major film innovators.
So why now for his appearance? Is there something specific about Bad Lieutenant that's exciting, or is it just things happened to fall together that he was able to show up this time and never
well,
before?
Well, you know, first we got Werner Herzog, and then I just scheduled Bad Lieutenant very quickly so that we could actually have a recent film of his to introduce audiences to him, particularly to students who maybe aren't familiar with him. But he's living in Los Angeles now. And he's actually done a couple of these conversation type events with an acquaintance of his named Paul Hogengraber. and he's enjoyed them. But he's only done them with Paul.
And saw him in UCLA doing that.
They did at UCLA at Royce Hall last season.
That was excellent.
And he enjoyed it very much. And it turns out that Pico Iyer, who's going to do the conversation here in Santa Barbara, is friends with Paul Hogan Graber. So that's how we were able to kind of organize that.
How many of these, it seems like I've seen a lot of neat events at Arts and Lectures here that I feel like must have come together in that way, just as the metaphor is before the alignment of stars, things just happen to click in. Hope that snap came through on the audio. But is that actually true? Is my perception correct that this happens more than one might expect and leads to more interesting things than one might usually expect?
Some of it is true. The performing arts, for example, doesn't happen very often because of the nature of how we actually have to market and promote those events. So they tend to be programmed, for example, our 2010-11 season will be finished by the end of May. Then maybe we'll add two, maybe three performing arts events. Then following that, the lecture program gets added. Now, for some people, I need to schedule them well in advance because they're just extremely busy, and I work with lecture agents or publishing houses. For other people, I can be much more flexible. So we can schedule, say, 2 months out. The films are always the last thing to be added. Mm. They fill in the gaps in between.
They're the ones that can be 24 hours before the publication of the schedule and click in there? I see.
Yeah. They're much easier to get, and frankly, films don't have feelings, so they don't worry about did you get an audience for them or not.
That's a good point. Now, one more cinematic topic I want to hit before we take a break and move on to lectures and such is Broken Embraces coming, I have it down as the 6th of May. Now, there's been quite a bit of love for this director on this campus, right? At Arts and Lectures especially.
Yeah, you're very perceptive, Colin, I have to say. Well, I'm a huge Almodovar fan. So anytime he's got a new film that comes out, particularly if it's a good film, I really want to include it on the series. And again, part of that is there are an awful lot of students on campus who just don't make it downtown to see the films when they play commercially. And I want to give them an opportunity to come out and experience an Almodovar film here on campus.
How much do you consider it's an advantage or a disadvantage, the separation of city and university that is so distinct in this area?
Well, I think that it's a problem, frankly.
You don't think it gives you a kind of special venue that maybe if you were closer to downtown, there wouldn't be you wouldn't be able to show, for example, the Almodovar film that was playing at the Plaza de Oro?
Well,
not to cut you off.
Potentially. No. But this is something that we're trying to bridge, which is this gap between town and gown. And one of the ways that we've been trying to do it is, you've probably noticed and the listeners have noticed, we're doing a lot more events in the community. So at the Arlington, at the Granada, we're using Victoria Hall Theater, some events at the Libero. We're using a variety of different venues. We're going to Montecito at the Music Academy of the West. And what we're hoping is, as we cultivate community audiences, is that they will migrate and follow us back to Campbell Hall here to the campus to see many of the events that we're doing here. At the same time, we'd like to bring students into these venues downtown. But it is a challenge because one of the dilemmas we have on campus is that we don't have the other amenities that people enjoy when they go out to a performance out here on the campus. We don't have fantastic restaurants in the area. You can't come to our show and then go have a cocktail or dessert or something like that afterwards. We're kind of a one-stop destination. You come out to campus, you see a great event, but then you got to go home. So that's a problem for some community folks. And I hate to say it, there's still this perception somehow that the campus is very far away. And we're trying to break down that gap. At the same time, we recognize that for students, many of them, frankly, don't have automobiles, and it can be a challenge to make the trip downtown. And very often when we're doing, say, large dance events and there are many students traveling, they have to take the bus, which then can be a problem. So these are hurdles that we try to overcome as best we can.
If you've just tuned in, this is Poodle Radio, the official radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent. My name is Colin Marshall. I'm here with Roman Baratiak, the Associate Director of UCSB Arts and Lectures. Going to take a break and come right back when we'll move on from the cinema to the lecture portion of the Spring Arts and Lectures Quarter. Playing Soho on Friday, April 16th, here's Beach House and Used to Be. It's Poodle Radio, the official radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent. My name is Colin Marshall. I'm joined today in the studio by Roman Baratiak, Associate Director of UCSB Arts and Lectures. We discussed cinema in our last segment. Now, to talk about the lectures coming up this quarter, there's one name that I'm never surprised but always happy to see, David Sedaris.
Yeah.
What is the story with his super frequent appearances that, I mean, I don't get tired of him. Don't construe it like that. I love seeing him. But how does he get here so often? And why?
You know, it's just incredible how Santa Barbara audiences respond to David Sedaris. You know, he's at the Arlington Theater. We're basically presenting him now on an annual basis. Give you a sneak preview. He'll be back again in 2011. And he is the hottest selling thing that we have, always on our schedule. He always sells out.
It's always packed when I'm there, I notice, yeah.
And then, you know, if you stay for the book signing, Colin, I mean, they last for hours. And
he's got that kind of signing ethos, and he's got to get it all, as I understand it, he's got to get it all signed, or else he doesn't really feel like he's given the audience there.
Oh, absolutely. You know, he comes out a half hour before the show starts to sign books so that the line is shorter than it would be at the end. But, you know, it's amazing what's happened with David Sedaris, because the first time he was on the schedule, I booked him probably it was, I don't know, I think early 90s. And it was at Campbell Hall. It was a free event. And I think we had 500 people show up for him. And wow. Then it just exploded. And I think it really was This American Life that really made the difference. Plus the books that came out really resonated with people. And they just want to have a good time. You know, it's springtime. People want to have fun.
Now, this issue of David Sedaris playing really well in Santa Barbara gets into something important, which is something you're going to know a lot about, the nature of programming for specifically Santa Barbara. I mean, what is the operative character of this community that you think about when you're putting these things together? Or is Santa Barbara comparable to the college towns of its size, and you just kind of do what you would do there? Or what's distinct about Santa Barbara?
Well, I think what's amazing about the community is it's a very, very well-educated, very smart, very eclectic community that is interested. What we find in our programs is it's people don't just come, say, specifically to a dance performance, or they're not specifically classical music people. They're interested in everything. They're interested in politics. They're interested in good literature. They're interested in cinema. We have people who come to just a panoply of different kinds of events. And I think that's what's unique about the community. Also, how incredibly supportive they are of these different kinds of events that we're presenting. So I don't think it's your typical sort of college town, to be honest with you.
Has anything surprised you by not being to the taste of Santa Barbara?
Interesting question. You know, it's become more challenging, but I think it's also because the Santa Barbara market is really, really packed with classical music. When I was house manager, Arts and Lectures was one of the few classical music presenters in terms of smaller sort of chamber groups and solos. The Community Arts Music Association has been around for many, many years and does fantastic large orchestras, traveling orchestras. The symphony has been around. But we were kind of the presenter of the quartets and, you know, solo violin or solo piano. Classical music has become much more of a challenge, but there's an awful lot of it in Santa Barbara. So I think that market has changed for us. We pretty much are the sole traveling dance presenter in Santa Barbara. And we're very successful with that. And much of that is because the dance division on campus is great and very supportive. Theater's always been a challenge to find good traveling theater.
Is there not much around, or just not much that can get here?
Not much that travels.
Oh.
Yeah. There's plenty of resident companies, but it's expensive to travel theater. And we've had, partly because of the way Campbell Hall is configured, it was difficult for us to present certain kinds of groups because of the limitations of the hall. The dance the floor is not very real big. There's no fly house. You can't bring in scenery. So moving to the downtown venues really helped us out with that.
Now, some of the lectures coming up in this quarter, you've got two current event-themed lectures, one from Fareed Zakaria on the 12th of April, and one from a man who's actually been a guest on my other show on the station, Ian Baruma, on the 11th of March, or March, 11th of May, not in the past, in the future. What taste of the community do these guys play to?
This will be Fareed's second visit to Santa Barbara. He came, I think, 2 years ago to Westmont College. They have an annual president's breakfast there, and he spoke for them. It's a very politically engaged community that really wants to know what's happening in terms of foreign affairs, what's happening with U.S. foreign policy. And somebody like Fareed Zakaria, whose background is really pretty amazing in terms of he's the international editor for Newsweek International. He's got the program on CNN, Fareed Zakaria GPS. He was editor, longtime editor at Foreign Affairs Magazine. Somebody who, frankly, could probably run as Secretary of State at some point.
He's a former wine columnist, too, right? So that's very Santa Barbara.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. He's the whole package.
But he also has amazing guests on his program. I mean, I just listened to a program last night where he was interviewing, who did he interview? I think he interviewed Larry Summers. I have to say it wasn't a very real great interview, but that was because of Larry. And, you know, he's interviewing all sorts of world leaders, frankly, on his program and asking them tough questions. So,
and then Ian Buruma as well. He's an interesting character for a number of reasons. What's he going to be focusing on his visit here?
Right. Buruma teaches at Bard College. I first became aware of him through the New York Review of Books, where he's a frequent contributor. He's going to be speaking about a new book that he's written that is looking at kind of this rise of Islamophobia in Europe. And it's really, is there a real threat from the Muslim population in Europe? Because, you know, as the economy has gotten tougher, there's a kind of looking around to blame people. And this has really come to the fore in Europe. He's written quite a bit about the Netherlands. So he talks about the situation with Theo van Gogh, for example, who I don't know if you know a filmmaker who was murdered in the streets by an Islamic radical. But he's also looking at the situation in Switzerland with the banning of minarets. He's looking at the French situation with, again, the banning of the hijab in French public schools. So he's just looking to see what's the reality of the situation.
And on a less serious note, you also have, I'm 25, and so this guy is an icon of my childhood. And everybody else in my age cohort, I think, Bill Nye the Science Guy, I didn't know he was touring. That comes as a surprise, a pleasant surprise to a lot of people. And we've heard a lot about him since his days as the actual PBS Bill Nye the Science Guy seem to have ended. What's going on with him now? What brings him to Santa Barbara?
Yeah. You know, I hope people don't think he's going to come and like explode a lot of things and do a lot of the things that he did on his show, because it's not going to be that. He's also really wants to get people excited about science. So he's coming and giving a talk. Some of it, I'm sure, will probably be dealing with climate change, but other issues of science that are in the news right now. And to just try to encourage people like yourself and me to keep getting excited about science. That's why he's calling it a big blast of science. But it's not a kid's show. I mean, it's really for 15 and up, and it's really for adults also, frankly.
From what we've talked about so far, we've gotten this huge variance in topics already. And when you said that Santa Barbara is interested in everything, it's really borne out by that. When programming a schedule for arts and lectures, I guess my question becomes, is there a limit to this, the range, like the range of things arts and lectures wants to be known for covering? Or is it just as much as we can get in? You know, we want to be known for the variety.
Well, I think trying to serve a variety of different audiences really matters. It matters to me as the person who's involved with selecting the programs. I think that there's also one of the things that I find is a frustration because there are so many interesting people to bring, so many interesting films to screen that we can't do more of them, frankly. And we already have a very rich schedule, which takes up, you figure a quarter is about 2 months worth. We do about a month's worth of programming every two months. But still, I get frustrated because, you know, I'd like to do more poetry. I'd like to do more fiction writers. I'd like to do more people in the sciences, for example. And I get, very often I feel like we get to kind of make little touch points, but we can't get in depth with some people. So one of the things we're looking at into the future is, we'd really like to get people to come and do more extended residencies. So they're not just coming for one day and they're going to give a talk and do a seminar session for students, et cetera. We want them to come for a few days and really work with local community organizations, spend a lot of time with students, really make a much bigger impact than we're able to do right now. And a lot of that is depending on funding, and we're in the process of trying to raise funding so we can do these things.
And this is something I certainly want to know more about, but we'll take a break to get some PSAs in here. This is Poodle Radio. My name is Colin Marshall, in studio with Roman Bratiak, Associate Director of UCSB Arts and Lectures. Here's one from Franklin for short. It's Brother Bird. They're playing the Biko Co-op Garage on Monday, April 12th, right here in Isla Vista.
Singing in his tree.
It's Poodle Radio. I'm Colin Marshall. This is, of course, the official radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent. Joining me today in the studio is Roman Bratiak, Associate Director of UCSB Arts and Lectures. Now, before the break, you talked a little about the change you've envisioned for you and everyone who's works with you, presumably has envisioned for Arts and Lectures. But what I want to know first is, in the time you've been here, in the long time you've been here, what sort of change have you seen in Arts and Lectures in terms of course, the scale? It gets a little larger every time. I've only lived in Santa Barbara 7 years, but it seems to me, you know, the names get bigger, the roster seems to get larger every time. I extrapolate backwards, and it seems like it must have been quite a small operation when you began. Is that so, or is that just an illusion based on how big it's been getting lately?
No, it's definitely gotten to be a bigger program. The scale of the program has gotten, it's really the scale of the presentation and the performer that we're presenting is higher. Quantity-wise, I wouldn't say that we're doing more programming. We did a tremendous number of programming in the early 80s. Frankly, we were running two consecutive film series each quarter during that time. But there have been a lot of transformations over time, some of them as a result of what's happening in terms of the university itself. So, for example, it used to be that we were getting all of our funding directly from the university. Now, we, like everybody else in the not-for-profit sector, is heavily involved in development. So we've really become a community-supported endeavor, not a strictly university endeavor. We're based at the university, but much of our support comes from the community. So that's had a big impact on our programming. The field has changed dramatically. Particularly, I can speak to the lectures side, where there are lecture agents now basically representing anyone with any name recognition. So that has changed the marketplace significantly. It used to be you could just write a letter to someone and ask them to come out, and they would respond, and eventually they would get on your schedule. Now you have to work through agents. So that's affected the economics of everything. You know, things have radically changed from what they used to be. It used to be in the performing arts, for example, it was anathema to use the term marketing. Mm. You know, these were things that were good for you. This was like having cereal in the morning, right? That's changed. Much of the field is now populated by people with MBAs. In arts administration. So that's had an impact in terms of the view of it. It used to be many sort of society women ran these particular programs, and it was for kind of an elite. And I think the good thing is that what's happened is that it's no longer for an elite. It's really for everyone. And it's just become another part of the kind of entertainment options that people have to select from.
I guess we can call that perhaps a democratization of it, but some say when they talk about how that's happened in various arts organizations that it's changed the content of them as well. Is that the case in Arts and Lectures here at UCSB, or is it less about the content than, as you said, about the attitude with which that content is conveyed to the public?
Some of it has definitely affected the content. I wouldn't say it's affected it in the performing arts. But in the lecture side, there's been some things that have happened that frankly have disappointed me. It used to be that when people would come to deliver a lecture, they actually crafted a specific talk just for your venue. Mm-hmm. That has gone away. For many people, because they're in such high demand, they can pick and choose where they're going to go. And they can very often pick and choose what they're going to talk to you about. We try to avoid the canned speech, which is, you know, the same talk that they delivered at 50 different places. But invariably, sometimes that happens. Often there are people now who just want to do a conversation. They don't want to prepare anything for you. It didn't used to be that way. It really used to be that people would sit down and write out an hour-long lecture. It was something that you could publish because it was unique. So that has changed on the lecture side. This, on the film side, you know, everything is completely different from what it used to be. There were no Netflix. There was not all these cable channels. There wasn't all of these other ways that you could get your film fix. It used to be that going to a film was like going to any other event. It was only going to play in your town for a very short period, or for us, for example, it only played one time, one night. And so if people wanted to see the latest Truffaut film, they were all going to go. And then they would go out to the coffee house and talk about it. So the culture is different in regards to how people access the arts.
I do have to say, though, and this is an opportune moment to bring it up since you're heavily involved in the cinema selections and arts and lectures, that since I came to Santa Barbara in 2003, I have noticed, and again, maybe this is one of my illusions, but in the last 2 or 3 years, the cinema schedule has been getting really quite a bit more interesting. I'm thinking of recent films such as City of Sadness, 35 Shots of Rum, or if you go back a little bit to offerings like Paranoid Park and Silent Light, two of my favorite films of the decade because I saw them at Arts and Lectures. Has there actually been a change in sensibility in recent times, or am I just inventing that as well?
No, I don't think there's been a change of sensibility because you've been stuck with the same person's sensibility. So you've been sort of, I'm happy to hear you say that you're happy with the film selection. I'm always kind of wonder how people are going to respond. But I think it's interesting. There are so many good things that have happened on the film side. I mean, I have to say the Santa Barbara International Film Festival is fantastic in terms of getting people excited and engaged about films in Santa Barbara. One of the things that can be viewed as a downside, which is this ability to go and see films on Netflix or go see them on cable or whatever. Okay, number one, you may have seen Casablanca, but you haven't really seen Casablanca.
True,
you know, you need
true.
To see it with an audience on the big screen in a darkened theater. But at the same time, what used to happen is if you missed that film by Herzog in the 70s, that was it. You weren't going to see it again. Now you can see all of his films and really understand who he is and get a sense of his sensibility. So it's been a great education for people. So I think it's actually been positive. But in terms of what we're doing, it hasn't changed too much. You know, the quantities have changed. But on the horizon is a really exciting opportunity that's going to happen at the Pollock Theater here on the campus at the Center for Film, Television, and New Media. And if you haven't been there, I highly recommend asking if they can take you on a tour. It hasn't opened yet, but it's a brand new 299-seat cinema theater with stadium seating, all top-of-the-line audiovisual equipment, hopefully donated by Sony. And its sole focus is to present film and new media. That's all they're going to do programmatically in there. It's going to be fantastic because suddenly we'll be able to do national cinemas. You'll be able to do thematic cinemas. You'll be able to do really interesting explorations of film, which we're just not able to do because we're presenting an eclectic series, but unable to really get in depth into a specific topic or a filmmaker.
I'm certainly looking forward to that going up. Is Arts and Lectures going to be involved in any way in using that new theater?
Yes, we will. But the conversations have yet to happen in terms of what's happening programmatically there.
I want to tie together a few threads here. Number one being film. Number two being lectures. Number three being the sort of change in the way the fundraising has worked, which is the Ken Burns benefit at the end of the season. I'm going to be holding at my pad here, the 24th of May. Now, how did that come together?
Right. So this is our 50th anniversary. You only get 50th one time. And our final event is Ken Burns. So we actually scheduled Ken to come to Santa Barbara. And we decided we would make that event our final event, but it would be a benefit event. Again, because frankly, we need the financial support. And so we've arranged to have him speak at the Coral Casino. It's open to the public. Tickets are not cheap. It's a $350 ticket, but it's limited to only 300 people. There's a dinner with it. Ken will give a presentation called Sharing the American Experience, where he'll be showing clips from three of the films that he's worked on, baseball, jazz, and I think also clips from Civil Wars. And he'll talk about, you know, his work. I mean, he's really kind of the premier historical documentary filmmaker in the U.S. And it's just a way for us to culminate and to thank the people who have been supporting us.
It's one of those things that seems like a bold move to play to Ken Burns fans because they're not very vocal, but there have got to be a lot of them out there because he draws them in on television. So it, I guess this must be one of those things where they come out of the woodwork when you give them the opportunity to come see, you know, the man who's made these.
Yeah, and I've also seen him speak, and he's a very dynamic speaker who'll pull you in and really get you motivated and excited. So I think it's going to be a really fantastic evening. And it's, frankly, a good program for us in terms of, you know, finishing up the 50th anniversary. It's been a long year, but it's been a very successful year, and we've gotten such positive feedback from people. It's been great.
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to the season. Roman Braziak, thank you so much for taking the time to come on Poodle Radio.
All right. Thank you so much, Colin. It's really fun.
This has been Poodle Radio, the official radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent. I've been Colin Marshall. Our music is collected by Poodle Radio music producer and associate arts editor Alec Gummingor. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we will catch you next time. Here's Black Uhuru with Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. Lead singer Michael Rose is going to play Soho on Saturday, April 17th. Suffering.